Today with Clare Byrne on RTE Radio 1.
Now it's time for the Friday Gathering, and I'm joined in the studio by Jennifer Carroll McNeil, Fine Gael TD for Dunleary, Pádraig McLoughlin, Sinn Féin TD for Donegal, Aoife Moore, political correspondent at the Irish Examiner, and Dermot O'Leary, General Secretary of the National Bus and Rail Union. And you're all very welcome. Thank you for being here today. Our first guest this morning, Jennifer, was your colleague in government, Willie O'Dea, and from the Fianna Fáil TD, and he was saying that in his view, the government really should be giving people some extra money this summer. He says the money is there. You're going to spend it anyway in October. I mean, what is the logic for not doing something now?
The logic is to try to do it within the budgetary process in October and to try to deliver that in October. Usually those measures come into effect January, February, March the following year. Last year we were able to do significant work on the fuel allowances immediately in October, and so it had immediate effect. People will have seen a 55% increase in the fuel allowance support that they got, particularly at the low income end of the scale. So we are in a budgetary process. We have had measures in February, March and April, which would be most unusual, to try to recognise the particular fuel-based inflation arising from the Russian invasion of Ukraine. But I think, you know, what I'm interested in for October is what we're doing and how quickly it can be given effect. Fuel poverty and additional fuel allowance is particularly targeted.
And for those measures to happen straight away.
Yes,
well,
exactly.
You know,
but there's something else, though.
He was saying, though, why allow people to suffer for the next 4 months? These are his words, when we have the financial firepower to help them now.
Well, I think if you look, though, every year, the real pressure, particularly on home heating and support, is from October onwards, and we have been able to deliver additional supports throughout early part of this year while it was still in the winter season. We are in the summer season now, but we need to, it needs to be a broader budgetary strategy. It's not just that. For example, we need to address inflation by addressing the cost of living more broadly. So what I'd really like to see is a significant tackling of childcare costs for parents, particularly parents with very young children who are often at a stage of life where they're paying either a mortgage or very high rents, and also an equivalent outgoing in terms of childcare.
So those are the sorts of measures. But he's saying people need it now. People are coming to him in his constituency and saying, we cannot get through the week.
There is an additional needs payment that's available from social welfare. The department is advertising this extremely broadly on radio, on newspapers. It is there to help people. It has always been there, by the way, but the Department of Social Protection is putting huge resources around making sure that people are aware of it. I'm certainly telling anybody who comes to me, I always have done, who needs additional money, whether it's for a fuel bill, whether it's for, you know, these things that happen, like a washing machine breaks and you need these additional things from time to time. There is an unlimited amount of money there in social protection for that.
Okay.
What you do is you go to your community welfare officer. It is targeted to people who are either on social welfare or who are not on social welfare, but on lower incomes and who are meeting, you know, unusual challenges. And that money is there
all
the time.
Okay, so you're steadfast in your position. There should be no budgetary measures taken before
what
October.
I'm interested in is what's going to be in the budget, how it's going to impact people, when it's going to impact people. And I'd prefer to see a significant package that addresses the cost of living more broadly, and not just one element of that, but the structural costs that are there. Because if we get stuck in inflation forever and ever over the next couple of years, we're going to be in a much more difficult position. And I'd rather see the work done properly now to get that done, to deliver it in October or very shortly thereafter in a meaningful way for a broad group of people.
Willie O'Dea, Pádraig, said he wouldn't be voting with Sinn Féin on this motion to have an emergency budget, which I think you're bringing next week. But he does believe in what you're trying to do, it would seem. I mean, he does want something to happen before the October budget, but you heard Jennifer there, it's obviously not on the cards.
Yeah, it's not just Sinn Féin that's saying we need an emergency budget. I mean, if you look at the ASRA commentary, they've talked about the need for an intervention now. If you look at the central bank, the Irish Fiscal Advisory Council, fairly conservative advisory framework there, saying clearly that we need an intervention now. I mean, the reality for people around this country is that they are really, really struggling to cope with a huge hit across cost of living, particularly in the energy costs. And they cannot wait. And it isn't just October. It could be into next year and some of the measures. So you could be talking 6-7 months. What we're saying is there needs to be an intervention. Yes, there needs to be a very comprehensive budget in October, absolutely. But there needs to be an intervention now. And that's a widespread view. I haven't even mentioned Social Justice Ireland, Vincent de Paul, who are at the coal face of dealing with this. So it needs to happen.
Aoife?
Yeah, I just wanted to add the point. Like, I understand where Jennifer's coming from in there saying that they want a comprehensive budget that will tackle the cost of living. But the people who are working at the coal face the likes of Bernardo, Social Justice Ireland, those, and St. Peter McVeary, and they were, Father Peter McVeary, not saying yet, they were saying that what we actually need is targeted measures because it is the people at the very bottom of the rung that are suffering. My concern now is we're only at the start of the summer, but we are coming into kids going back to school. Are we going to see, you know, stuff for uniforms, for back to school, that kind of grant that we saw during COVID? I think that's something that would need to be looked at by the government.
What about the advice that Jennifer has reiterated again, and we heard it from various ministers, that you, if you have a really bad problem, you can always go to your social protection office and you can seek a payment and it is there for you.
But what about the working poor? What about people who are not
It includes those. And it's not just social welfare recipients. It's people who are working as well and who are in low income situations and who face a particular
Dermot,
challenge.
Dermot, you're shaking your head there as well.
I am, because you see, look, the problem for me with what Jennifer is saying is you have someone going cap in hand to a community welfare officer. It's begging for something. That's what the impression you're left with. In terms of what Jennifer says around the budget, there does need to be interventions, and as Aoife said, targeted interventions. I would suggest around stuff like fuel, for example, maybe the double social welfare payment that's been talked about out there. And again, I suppose the old cliche that a society is judged on how it treats its most vulnerable. And I think the government themselves are setting themselves a very, very high task, because everybody now looking at this October budget will be expecting lots of stuff coming from that.
Can you see the dilemma though for government? You know, you are going to have to do something in October because of the energy costs that people are going to be facing at that time. It's just whether you do it now or whether you do it then.
Well, whether you call it an emergency budget or whether you call it interventions, it does need to be interventions, I believe, before the budget. I understand the budgetary process, I understand the budgetary cycle, of course I do, but there does need, and as Aoife says, there are people with decent enough salaries out there that are actually struggling. That's the frightening part for me. Mm-hmm. And I represent people in the bus industry who probably wouldn't like me to say this, are on reasonable terms and conditions, could be better, but they're struggling. So when you see something like that happening, then there has to be something done in relation to an intervention.
So, I think that's a really disrespectful way to describe people who do access additional needs payments. I have many constituents who have gone through that process at different stages where they've been under additional pressure, and they certainly didn't see it in that way. They got support where they asked for it, where they needed it. They engaged with the community welfare officer.
It wasn't my intention to be disrespectful.
It's important.
I speak to people on a regular basis, and some people actually will not go there because that's what they feel. So I'm going to reflect on what people are saying.
Yeah, you're right. Dermot's right. There was a very, very bad Eamon Ryan came out with this first, you know, go to the social welfare officer, and there was a furious reaction across society to that. I can't believe it's been repeated. It is. What we need is an intervention now, you know, and repeat it again. I mean, this isn't Sinn Féin, this is ESRI, Central Bank, Irish Fiscal Advisory Council.
Well, they're saying if you do take any measures, they must be targeted.
And just to say, and this is important, because you have Leo Varadkar.
By the way,
this whole issue about the October budget doesn't... I mean, the only logical explanation is the transition to Leo Varadkar taking over as Taoiseach. So it's to have this BAM announcement to clear the pathway for him to come in, or whoever's going to lead from Fine Gael. So it's not about the needs of our people, it's about the needs of Fine Gael. Now, in terms of the announcements, Leo Varadkar, the stuff that Leo Varadkar came out with about tax cuts to the wealthy...
So you're saying Leo Varadkar wants the big bang in October because he's about to become Taoiseach
I'm trying to figure out what the logic of this is, because it's clearly not related to anybody's real lived experience on the ground.
So
but just in terms of Leo Varadkar, he talked about tax cuts to the wealthy. How on earth is that going to bring down inflation? That is pro-inflation. For tax cuts to the wealthy, if you have targeted measures
what
to people,
cuts for the wealthy?
He talked about the same.
What was the target?
He talked about tax cuts for the wealthier parts of society. He talked about it in the last week.
I think what Patrick is referring to is tax indexing, which they're looking at in the next budget.
Which targets who exactly?
Well,
it targets middle income workers between 30 and 50,000 euros. Is that the wealthy?
Well, I'm going to say
this is something. Sorry, hold on a second.
Talk about social welfare again. So that's fine. You can go to the social welfare. Is that what you're going to say again?
No, what I'm going to do is talk about the package of measures that were introduced in last year's budget before the Ukrainian war, which you voted against, which was $500 million in relation to additional welfare supports and $500 million in respect of tax indexation, which targeted people, particularly in middle income earnings, who are under pressure just as much as other people are under pressure. Yeah. So that was done last year. So you can make a big hoo-ha about going into a budgetary process this year, except that we did it last year as well. We will do it this year also. Yeah. There are two sets of measures where we can use. There is nothing wrong with social welfare work. And there's nothing wrong with delivering supports in a targeted way, which is exactly what you've talked to. And the best way of doing that is through the social welfare mechanisms that we already have, and to deliver a tax package that targets middle income workers, because they also need support.
I just like to say, there's not absolutely nothing wrong with being on social welfare, but there is a failure of government if people who are on a wage and who are working feel that they then need to go to the social welfare, because we should have wages that allow you to live in the country where you pay tax and enjoy a quality of life. Just to go back on what we were talking about before, also the other thing the government are saying, which it makes sense on the face of it, is that money for heating or whatever else, is it starts to hit in October because that's when it gets colder or whatever. We don't live in Spain. We get about a week of good weather per summer. I have a concern that if we don't have a good summer and houses are getting colder, the government will have to intervene there as well for elderly people and whoever else, or people living in defective houses whose houses are freezing, because we, this notion of like, yeah, it gets colder in October, but it's not like it's 40 degrees here in August.
I think Aoife is right, because I was up the country this week, and actually in Donegal, as it happens, and I see like past a few houses, and one of my colleagues says there's fire lighting in there. I said the houses are cold. This is June now, so there is, and look, again, I don't get involved in a political war with Jennifer or Paddy here, but certainly in terms of the targeted measures and that Aoife spoke about, ESRA are talking about, social justice talking about, they're the kind of stuff that needs to happen immediately. Go off and do your budget as you always do, no problem with that, but those measures, those people need help now, not in October.
And Sinn Féin has been criticised for talking about measures like cutting the carbon tax, reducing VAT. They're not targeted measures, ESRI said, Alan Barrett was on here last week, and he said that's like writing a cheque for rich people.
Well, just to be clear on the carbon tax, it wasn't to increase the carbon tax any further. And we found it extraordinary at a time when energy costs, and let's just recap on what we're talking about here. We're talking about 50%, 60% energy increases for petrol, diesel. We're talking about more than doubling of home heating oil costs. There's no intervention there at all on home heating oil. By the way, where I come from in the world, 2/3 of the people heat their homes with home heating oil.
Mm-hmm.
Doubling in price. No intervention, no supports from government. So what we were talking about was not increasing carbon tax in that context. But in terms of Leo Varadkar, he's been doing the rounds. I mean, it's been a clear strategy to get him promoted ahead of him taking over of Taoiseach, which is the plan of Fine Gael.
Let's talk about that political point that you made. Jennifer, you might want to address that Fine Gael want to save the big bang for when, just before Leo Varadkar becomes Taoiseach again.
I think it's a really interesting political point. It's the first time I've heard it, and it's, if that were so, why was Fine Gael pushing for the welfare and tax package last year? I mean, there's a transition. I mean, there's a peaceful and ordinary transition of government planned in December. That's been long known. That's what we're working towards. There's a budget as normal and going through the normal budgetary process with the National Economic Dialogue, the summer statements and so on, which we built into the system so that we have stability in our budgetary process. And then there's a transition of government in December. I'm not sure what the big deal is.
But Jennifer, you, the Taoiseach has said this is a war. He sees these words. This is a wartime situation. This is a true emergency that our people are facing. You are speaking today as if, we have the normal budgetary cycle. We'll do it in October.
No, I'm asking you what your problem with Leo Varadkar becoming Taoiseach
is. And if you're stuck, you can go to the social welfare officer.
What's, by the way, is your alternative in relation to that? Well, because are you against the additional needs structure? Are you against that?
No.
Because you were against the measures that we introduced to extend welfare and to reduce tax last year. So it's just unclear to me. Is it just sighing
Seriously?
And giving out?
No, not really, actually. Piers Doherty, and you know this, Jennifer, you're a capable representative of Fine Gael. He has given you, in recent months, Sinn Féin's alternative proposals in terms of how you would intervene now, and he'll do it again when it comes to the budget in October.
I've heard him.
And you know that. And it's fully costed, and it's rooted in what people need out there. So come on.
I've heard him, and I've heard you talking about home heating oil, which is not subject to excise duty, and we can't reduce the VAT. But those facts just don't matter to you at all.
Laura Bambrick from ICTU is tweeting that full-time workers who are working for more than 30 hours a week are not eligible for the exceptional needs payments.
The workers are entitled. I have had constituents of mine on low incomes apply for and receive additional needs payments.
Are they full-time though? Are they working more than 30 hours?
I don't want to speak to individuals, but I'm telling you, I've had at least 5 people in the last 3 months receive
We might check it, but I mean, we've got to assume that Laura would know what she's talking about there. Moving on to public sector pay, because Dermot, your own union was one of 5 that negotiated this pay deal over 5 years. So 10.5%, wasn't it, over 5 years, with a possible 4.5%. 5%. Is that the benchmark now, in your view, that all workers should be getting? Because we know the 5% over 2 years was rejected by ICTU this day last week.
Well, again, just so people understand, I mean, we're not involved in the public sector pay talks, as people, some people know that, some people won't. We did a deal in Irish Rail and must be balloted on, of course, by the members, and it is up to 15% inclusive of some efficiencies, and maybe it will become the benchmark. I don't know, but again, I suppose the conversation we're having this morning, some people might say 15% is not enough in terms of
If you average it out over the 5 years, yeah, it's 3%. I mean, it's way short of inflation.
Oh, it is way short of, and that's the point I'd like to make. I mean, in terms of government interventions, and we're all waiting for this budget, as it would now appear, there needs to be some relief on tax. I mean, in this country, like, we pay tax on everything in this country. In terms of the USC, for example, someone should look at the USC and trying to reduce the bans or abolish some of the bans in USC, for example. And you need to put money into people's pockets. Like, the more money in people's pockets, income they have, the more they put into the economy. It's a no-brainer.
That's as good as you're going to get, you're saying 15% over 5 years. Well, so the other measures, if you're going to put money into people's pockets, have to come from taxation.
Well, it has to come from government. That's the government's role, as far as we're concerned. That is the government's role. Whether it's a benchmark or not, clear, I don't know. But I assume the public sector unions will be looking at that and at least trying to match that, mm-hmm, if not go beyond.
Do you think that's what will happen, Aoife?
We'll just have to wait and see. I've been quite disheartened this week, you know, the kind of divisive reporting that we've seen on, you know, it was called a pay increase, but it's actually a pay restoration. The FEMPI restoration. It's not a pay increase. It's restoration from wages that were cut during the last crash. And I don't think we should, and I think we're better than putting workers against workers. I don't think that's what we should be doing. I think the two things can run parallel. And as the government and Leo Varadkar has said, a lot of the people who, the top earning civil servants who are receiving this, are consultants, they're surgeons, mm-hmm, they're doctors. And I think,
yeah, when ICTU members are offered 2.5% mm-hmm a year, and people are being told, no, you're not getting any cost of living intervention until October, you mm-hmm can understand how those increases, and mm-hmm they are increases on what people are on now, they're going to be on more money, higher paid public servants, how that sticks in the craw. You can understand.
Oh yeah,
that.
It's totally unfair, but it's not the fault that we should be punishing workers and putting workers against workers. This lies with the government. Now, the government have said, you know, they're happy to get back around the table with the public sector workers, and they'll go back to the WRC and whatever else. I think it becomes very divisive, and we've seen how that works in England as well, this notion of like going after people who want better paying conditions. It doesn't work well, and I don't think it helps the dialogue in the country, and I don't think it helps workers in general. So I think the government, you know, has a way to go now to get the public sector workers back around the table and offer them something that they're willing to take.
In terms of, I've said this over the last number of weeks, the private sector, this debate is starting, every few years this debate starts about public and private, and it's an appalling thing for worker against worker, as Aoife says, and again we shouldn't forget the amount of money that went into banks in this country way back in the crash. So the notion that people would promote private workers and public sector workers fighting with each other over pay is wrong, to be honest, mm-hmm, with you, and I think it would be an appalling avenue to pursue.
Sinn Féin said that the move to restore pay under FEMPI was tone deaf, but you did vote for it, so you couldn't really come out forcefully against it, because you did say it was the right thing to do at the time in 2017.
Well, what you have is, we support the public sector pay agreements, and the legislation that followed that was pretty much rammed through the Dáil. Now, the government will have to account for that. That's their legislation. I think they should, though, publish legal advice. They've said that they... Now, they're a separate issue here, but I think hospital consultants... We would accept that.
Okay, so it's not tone deaf to restore hospital consultants' pay.
I think a hospital consultants' pay, the reality is, in order to keep them where we need them, God knows we need them in the public health system, there probably needs to be a reality around what they have to get paid in order to do that, unfortunately. Mm. Although the bigger issue is actually the conditions that they're working under, to have enough staff and nurses and junior doctors around them.
Would that mean, like in a Sinn Féin government, you would say to one group of workers, well, we'll restore your pay, but say to the other ones, well, we're not going to restore yours?
No, I think that's, well, that's what laws are for. Like, I mean, it's not a catch-all scenario.
It is a catch-all scenario.
I think that's exactly what it is. Well, I think in terms of I'd like to see the legal advice anyway. I mean, what they're saying is that the legislation we brought in means that we have to go ahead with restoring pay. We would like to see the legal advice, is our point.
Mm-hmm. But to say tone deaf, it does foster that argument that Aoife just outlined, or, you know, that pitting people against people.
But we were criticised. We can't have it all here. You know, we were criticised in Sinn Féin for saying that, you know, the issue of hospital consultants, you know, if you insist that they can't get paid over a certain amount, we will not be able to keep them in the health system. So we accept that point, and now we've been criticised for it. So where do you go with that? Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, let's move on. I want to talk about taxis because the country is seeing a taxi crisis, lack of availability in taxis on the streets, especially in Dublin, late at night at the weekends. And the question that's being asked now, Jennifer, you might start us on this one, is whether the market needs to be just opened up to new companies now.
I think there's something very strong in that. You know, we see the census results. We're at the highest population since 1850 or so. We've more people working in the state than ever before. And as I look around, you know, I can see, I'm sure other people can see it, the pressure on our infrastructure, the pressure on critical infrastructure. And we started to put in place, you know, the plan to develop that through, you know, Project Ireland 2040, but it's really catching up. And I think in every way, whether it's public transport, whether it's the airport, whether it's the taxi service, services, we have to be able to provide for and service the people who live here and want to get around.
And what are the issues currently with taxis at the moment for people who mightn't be familiar with what's going on?
Well, what we're finding is that taxi drivers are, you know, at the peak times, there's only about 29% of them available to work. Obviously, it's a regulated industry, and what's making the other, you know, bringing in, for example, your Uber or Lyft, that people, you know, if they've been travelling abroad, might have used conveniently. Obviously, we have Uber, but not in the same way as you might have in another European city. The regulation is such that it's hard to incorporate that in the way that they work elsewhere. And so I think it's time maybe to have a look at that. They are convenient. They are alternatives.
The solution for government is staring them in the face. I mean, we have, I think, it's two or three 24-hour bus services in Dublin at the moment, right?
I'm sorry, I don't disagree with that. What I was going to say is that's one of a number of different things. Obviously, there is a lot of work that we need to do, not on the cost of taxis, but on the conditions for taxi drivers. But thirdly, public transport expansion, particularly late at night, and particularly around the country.
That is a huge infrastructure. And I met a taxi driver just this morning, in fact, right? And he made the point that he was sitting in the rank this morning before I got a taxi over here for a half an hour. And he makes the point quite strongly that on a certain night, 150,000 people, he reckons, flowing into one area in Dublin, for example, expecting to get taxis. That's just not feasible. And also, what the problem with the taxi industry, and I know lots of people that drive taxis, is the cost of insurance, for example. Mm-hmm. The 10-year car rule, 5,000 cars next year will breach the 10-year mm-hmm. rule and have to go off the road. Some of those cars are quite well equipped.
So in terms of Uber, in terms of Uber,
you could have a situation where taxis have to get rid of their car after 10 years. You could have someone driving a 20-year-old Uber, for example. Yeah. Plus the fact that I've seen Uber across the world, in fact, Jennifer. Yeah. But the taxi industry is an industry. It does employ people, albeit self-employed. It does provide a living for a lot of people. And just because on a Saturday night for 1 hour, mainly, there's a problem getting taxi. Of course there is. If you put people into the city...
Is it only an hour on a Saturday night?
Well, maybe a slight exaggeration there. We need to stagger. Sorry. We have a commission looking at the nighttime economy. We need to start staggering how we open and close places into the night and early morning so people can spread out their requirement for taxis and public transport.
And I don't want to prejudge everyone, but I think I'm the only person here who goes out in Dublin City Centre every Saturday night.
Consider ourselves prejudged.
I think that's the age of stuff.
Yeah, it is. As you know, the problems are well documented. It is a nightmare trying to get a taxi. The issue is that we're all kind of poured out onto the street at the one time. If you're going further out of Dublin, it's even harder to get a taxi because the taxi man doesn't want to have to drive the whole way back in. I have lived in other countries that have Uber. I don't think that's the way to go. I think deregulation, and we've seen horror stories in America about the working conditions for Uber drivers, safety of the passengers, especially women. Women are cagey enough about getting a taxi by themselves anyway. Getting into, you know, an unregulated taxi by some complete stranger with no license or anything like that does not make me feel any safer. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, public transport, I think it is the issue that's staring us in the face. Now, that's not going to work for rural Ireland, but, you know, like, I'm from not far from Patrickstown, and even taxis in rural Ireland's just someone ringing somebody's landline and getting them sent out to the house. So I do think there is a wider issue here. I don't think Uber is the way to go. I think in the first instance, public transport, 24-hour public transport, like other big European cities. Why haven't we mm-hmm. looked at that? Because as we've said, it is really only a couple of hours on a Saturday night. Yeah. And we can't go after a whole industry or open up a whole industry. And then the other issue is being a taxi man is really expensive. You know, the taxi license is expensive, the insurance, the car, everything we've talked about. So unless the government wants to intervene and make it easier to be a taxi man, because we're seeing the outworkings of this. You know, Lonely Planet last week warned people off coming to Dublin, said it's very expensive for hotels, you can't get taxis, the airport's a disaster. If we want to be, you know, we are this vibrant, amazing city for tourists to come to, we need to work out the issues. And getting a taxi on a Saturday night, if we are going to market ourselves on our nightlife and the crack in the pubs, we need to make it easier to be here.
Mm-hmm. But it mightn't be a taxi, it'll be a bus, is what you're saying. That's what you prefer to say.
Both. They work, they complement each other. I mean, a 24-hour bus service across the city with taxis operating side by side, they will. In actual fact, you thought the taxi drivers, they love having more buses because it gives them a chance to get around the city and keep cars out of the city is another thing. But of course, that's a different debate. Mm-hmm. And park and rides and all, it's a completely different debate.
Jennifer, the safety concerns raised by IFA about the private companies like Uber, do you share those?
Domestic violence against women is one of the things I work on more than anything else. I just wouldn't decouple it. Like, you know, things can happen anywhere. I've certainly used Lyft and found it really safe because it's tracking where I am. It's, you know, that's available to view elsewhere. So I think those issues are important everywhere, but like, it's a primary concern. And that's one of the most important things about extending public transport at nighttime. The idea that women are having to walk home, or anybody having to walk home distances. I remember doing it many years ago before there was taxi deregulation. People are having to do it again now, even with more taxis around. It's not safe. So, you know what, extending public transport is a big part of
this. It's also really embarrassing that Lonely Planet would tell people to avoid.
I know. Yeah,
an Irish city.
Yeah, and it's not
was it Ireland
Saturday
or Dublin?
Night.
It's just Dublin.
Yeah, and it's not just on Saturday night. It's lots of evenings. It's out into the suburbs. It's everywhere. Yeah.
Or do you want a word on that, or will we move on to your constituency?
Well, I agree with Aoife Dermot as it happens.
Listen, I want to talk about the census and the preliminary results we got yesterday. Adrian Kavanagh is quoted in the Irish Times today saying that the seats might go up in the Dáil from 160 to 176 or 178, even if future proofing were to happen. Now, that's going to cause massive headaches when it comes to recalculating, redrawing even, Aoife.
Constituency
maps.
Mm-hmm. Getting loads of new TDs. It's going to be great.
No, Billy O'Dea said people were agog
more,
at this.
More people do hang up on the phone on me. Yeah,
the peculiar part about it, though, is that when you look at some preliminary data, the net migration of 46,000 into Dublin would indicate that there might be 11 more seats, but about 4 of those will be in Dublin, as it happens. Mm-hmm. It's a very little headroom with some of the
positions
there.
Yeah, so just from off the top of my head, Dublin Fingal was the most underrepresented. So in the constitution, it says that there has to be one TD between every 20,000 and 30,000 people. Right. I believe Dublin Fingal's now at 34,000. It's already a five-seater.
And Meath East has a problem as well.
The only constituency that is actually under the 30,000 is Limerick County.
Yes, and yeah, that's interesting as well, because Limerick has had redraws in the past. Mm-hmm. Just on Donegal, though, one of the counties mentioned in this that could get an extra seat, Porrick, which would bring you up to 6 TDs. Does that mean it would need to be split again? What do you think?
Yeah, I think the best outcome for Donegal will be 2 three-seaters. There's a lot of anger in South Donegal. You know, Bundoran, Ballyshannon, Ballantra, Lahey was pulled into this kind of, they call it a Frankentown constituency, Sligo Leitrim, North Roscommon, it was West Cavan. So I think it would be nice if you had a Sligo-Leitrim, you know, the old neat Sligo-Leitrim constituency. 2 three-seaters in Donegal, that would be preferable if we get to that.
Redraws are nightmares for you guys, is that?
They can be, can be a real challenge, absolutely. But that's part of the, I mean, the constitution's clear, the maximum is 30,000. Like, if you take the 5-seater of Donegal now, it's absolute maximum, even though it's a really rural constituency. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I'm expected to represent 30,000 people, which is the same as somebody in a city that will find them within 10 minutes drive. So, like, I would drive over 2 hours.
But it's still the same number of constituents.
Yeah,
you know,
that, but the logistics and, are
no, but I appreciate that. But, you know, the same in my own area, you know, we're at the upper limit as well. So either there's an extra seat or you lose part of the boundary. And there are the changes. But what's important for people to realise is it isn't politicians making the decisions about how that's redrawn, unlike other countries where they sort of redraw to their own benefit. We sit and wait for the maps to be given to us by an independent commission, and that's the right way to do it.
Yeah. Following recent changes from the Department of Social Protection, the 30-hour rule for the additional needs payment no longer applies. So anyone can go, as you said earlier, for help to the Department of Social Protection and to the local community welfare officer. Now, we are going to take a quick break. Thank you all very much for coming in. Back after this.
Today with Clare Byrne. Listen back on the RTE Radio Player app.